Hello, and welcome to the Wardens of the Midwest podcast. I'm Mickey.
I am not Joe from Cincinnati.
I'm Mike.
Daenerys.
Aw, that's adorable. Well, unfortunately, we don't have Joe with us this week. So
Unfortunate? Is it really?
I have to say that, otherwise he'll get mad. And so we brought in one of our other meta mates. So, care to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Matthew. I'm our resident Stark player. It's fun stuff.
Pretty much our, what, only Stark player?
Pretty much. I mean, Joe played some Stark in his Night's Watch decks. That's about it.
But, I mean, you've been the only pure Stark player,
yeah,
though.
Token Stark player.
Yeah,
Token Stark.
In a horror movie, you'd be the first one to die.
That's pretty unfortunate. I would be beheaded.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the thing about it is, you've always, from the beginning, not only played Stark, but have played them well. You've placed well in almost every single tournament setting that you've come in, beating all the top decks. I mean, you're not only a Stark player, you're an excellent Stark player, which is why I think a lot of us don't feel the need to play Stark. We're like, we'll just see what Matt builds.
It's like, Matt will build the deck. Yeah. We'll see if it's relevant.
Exactly. And but I mean, it's been good having that, like, everyone who's picked their house, and, like, you know, like Joe, he plays Night's Watch, so none of us ever have to.
Yeah,
until they're a strong deck, because, you know, that's just how we are.
I don't know, that new one seems really good.
The new one,
new Night's Watch card, Neil,
two Rangers. Yeah. And a military challenge.
Watchers in the dark.
Yeah, that does look really good. Well, so last episode we were supposed to get to talking about Melee, but unfortunately ran out of time. So I was figuring maybe we could talk a little bit about the Melee format in 2.0. It wasn't really ever taken that seriously in 1.0, and I don't know how seriously it's going to be taken in 2.0, but it is one of my favorite formats. I absolutely love Melee because, to me, it embodies everything that is Game of Thrones. There's the scheming, there's the manipulation, there's the... just, like, you know, whining for the sake of, oh, but don't attack me.
I don't trust Mickey this entire game. He doesn't trust me either.
Yeah, no, I mean, there is all of that. And I think that that's what makes it important. But what I find really strange is that we don't have any Melee tournament rules. And so, like, all we have right now are the 1.0 rules. And, you know, from Gen Con, from Worlds, as they did that. And, I mean, I guess it makes sense. You know, there's not really... most tournament formats for store championships and, like, seasons kits are going to be joust tournaments. But what do you guys think? I mean, do you think Melee is a relevant format in this, or is it just kind of tacked on to a two-player game to give it a multiplayer component?
I mean, I like Melee to a certain degree. It definitely adds an extra layer of strategy trying to draft the roles, the titles. But at the same time, it seems like it could be gamed a little bit. I don't necessarily think I would like it as a competitive multiplayer. It would be interesting. I have not put terrible amounts of thought into an actual multiplayer deck, but I feel like there are only two real factions that could accomplish that, and I believe it's Greyjoy and Lannister.
Whoa, not Martell?
Martell might. I don't have a whole lot of experience with Martell in general, though.
The little bit of Melee that we've played, we played a very small Melee tournament just to get rid of some league kits that we had left over, and I just went straight to Martell, and I won the whole thing.
Yeah, but that's also one thing to keep in mind. That was just core set.
That was just core set, yeah. But you've got the whole, like, it's going to take more than four rounds for somebody to win this thing.
Sure.
And
why not just stall and then
Then all of a sudden, you Doran's know, Red game. Viper and Doran's game. Yeah. And,
you win.
You know, I claim 10 power. I win.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's certainly one strategy. It is a lot easier to pull off Martell when you can pick your opponent in a different way instead of just being a one-on-one game where that I think they're actually kind of weak in one-on-one up until recently.
Really?
Yeah, up until recently. No, I think they're actually pretty good now, but... like, with just core set, I think they were pretty weak.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, and so when it comes to, like, Melee tournaments and things like that, with the game pretty much in its infancy, I think printing Melee-specific cards right now would actually hurt the meta.
Yeah, but I think that's a mistake.
And that's the worst.
Yeah, and so, like, what they're doing, I mean, if you look at certain cards, like, let's take Highgarden, for instance. One thing that's really interesting about Highgarden is that you can use it for any challenge. They don't even need to be attacking you. Like, let's say Danny was initiating a challenge against Mike, and that would win him the game. I could Highgarden Danny's character out of the challenge. And so there is a lot of, like, cross-play cards, which I think are really neat, like Crossfire-type cards.
Yeah, I think we should talk about Crossfire. type stuff in Melee.
Yeah.
Which people don't, they just don't seem to realize it's even an option.
Sure.
Like anything you've got that you can trigger or your opponent has that they can trigger against you in a challenge, when it doesn't matter if you're making it against them.
Unless the card specifically states a challenge against you.
Exactly.
You know, and that's something that's really interesting about the Melee format is that they're giving printings for general cards. Because, I mean, we played a Melee game 2 weeks ago where I lost because of a High Garden play. It was actually Joe who triggered High Garden to get me out of the challenge, and I didn't even think about that. Like, I seriously was table flipped. I'm like, no, I can't believe this is happening
to me. It's a really good way to piss off your opponents, though. I'll say that.
It really is. But then there's great ways to make all of your opponents happy, like trading with Pentoshi. You know, everybody gets 3 gold. It's money. It's for everyone, you know? And I think that's, there's ways to make friends in it. And I think what's really interesting is that because they're not printing these Melee-specific cards, it almost holds the sanctity of the deck. You can bring a Joust deck to a Melee and still do fairly well, as long as you're, you know, because then you're picking your roles to protect yourself from the other two people as much as possible. And so it is almost like, you know, Joust with 3 to 6 players, essentially, at this point. But one of the things that I've been really curious about is, do you think they should come out with another, pretty much just reprint the 1.0 Melee rules? Or do they need to come up with a different set of Melee rules for tournament settings in order to make it a viable format?
Well, I think one of the big problems with 1.0, all the 1.0 players are going to know this, collusion and kingmaking.
Yeah.
And they never could quite come up with a way to stop that from happening.
Sure, sure. And, I mean, because you basically just need to get, if you have a big enough meta, you just need to get a few people through and, you know, your meta wins it, and that's all you really need right there. One of the things in 1.0, for people who don't know, basically Melee tournaments were done in a series of rounds. Each round was anywhere between 90 to 120 minutes. And, it was 100.
That doesn't seem right.
It was 105 minutes, but you could adjust it between 90 to 120 based on, you know, how many players you had. And but the standard was 105-minute rounds. Whoever won the Melee, that is, whoever got to 15 power first, gained 15 points. After that, whoever was the second highest power total, they would take their power, and if they were in second place, divide it by 2. If they were in third place, divide it by 3. If they were in fourth place, divide it by 4. And that's how many points they would get. And then you would match, like, point totals and then keep going up until you have a table of all the top point scores, essentially. And in some ways, like, I really liked Melee tournaments because it's a good way to get a lot of people in a tournament setting to play it, I mean, relatively quickly. Yeah, it's 105-minute rounds, but you're taking care of 4 people at once, which is essentially 2 games. And most of the time, Melee games didn't go to time. Like, I don't know about your guys' experience with them. Or like,
Rush.
Yeah.
Rush was king of Melee for as long as I can remember. Epic battles, games would finish in like 2 rounds. Dragon decks that just claimed like 6 power every round.
Yeah, that's kind of been my experience with Melee 2.0. One of the reasons I think that Greyjoy would be a strong Melee contender for like competitive Melee is because two Melee games in a row, I won on turn 2 or 3 by gaining just a boatload of power using Greyjoy, just making like 1 or 2 challenges.
Yeah, you do Rise of the Kraken.
A boatload of power using Greyjoy.
I think that was actually a pretty amazing pun.
You never know, Mike.
But I mean, and
I do
that's,
enjoy myself a good pun.
And that's the cool thing about Greyjoy, I mean, because you just find the weakest character, you Rise of the Kraken on that turn, and you're guaranteed, like, you know, unopposed like power for each of those challenges.
Yeah,
and you just go through it, and then it's up to the other people to stop you as much as possible. Because the thing about Greyjoy, especially with Seastone Chair out there and things like that, you always play against Greyjoy. You always make sure they're supporting you, so you don't, you know, earn the ire of Greyjoy at that point. And I think that's something that's really interesting about it. But yeah, Rush decks still seem to be king. Control decks can be good, but the other players kind of have to work with you and not inadvertently king make.
As long as we're talking about Greyjoy, there is one thing I don't like about the current Melee format. I've talked about this a couple of times off the cast, but the Melee game I played, I was playing, there was a Greyjoy player, and I was directly next to them in the clockwise orientation in which you select roles.
And they almost always go first.
Yeah,
anyway.
They had their high plot cards. So, but even if they didn't, just looking at the remaining roles,
sure.
I would always go like, I wonder what Greyjoy is playing, and yeah. just pick it. Since I was right after them, I always had the best chance to counterpick.
Yep, and there's only
so they're allied.
They have a choice between one of two cards essentially.
Yeah. If Greyjoy is going first, it's really easy because there's the discarded role that gets discarded before anyone picks the role.
Sure.
And then the role they picked. And so I have to sit there and go like, I wonder if Greyjoy picked Master of Whispers or Master of Ships.
Sure.
So I just think it'd make the game more random if orientation that you switch. Picked roles switched between rounds, so
sure,
clockwise, counterclockwise.
How would you introduce sort of that? What would it be, a game rule, every other round?
I think it should be a game rule.
Yeah?
Yeah, I agree. A couple of the Melee games I played were very much dictated by the seating arrangement, really messed up a lot of the things that, I personally was trying to accomplish. Granted, sometimes that's just messed up by other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, not even the drafting should be that way, but play should be that way as well. So that the person that, if Greyjoy is always going first, the same person isn't always going second as
sure.
well.
Sure. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, make it an actual rule that every other round is clockwise, counterclockwise.
I don't know if that would help the game or hurt the game.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it just
seems from my limited experience, it seems like something like that needs to be tested.
Or maybe just a card that lets you do that. Change the order. Maybe a plot card.
No one would play that, Mickey.
Yeah, I know. But
I think the problem is Rush needs to be nerfed for Melee. I've never really enjoyed Melee. Multiple Gen Cons of Melee have reinforced my dislike for Melee. And I think it's because Rush just rules it.
Okay.
There's three ways you can attempt to do Melee in a competitive or even non-competitive setting. You can go for the Rush that wins in hopefully turn two, maybe turn three. You can go for some sort of turtling deck, or you can go for some sort of hyper-aggressive control deck.
Okay.
Which is a way to piss everyone off.
Yeah, exactly.
I took a Mad King deck for Melee. I actually played Targ Burn in Melee, and it was just burn everything. player A made a challenge against player B. I burned all their characters away, and I'm not even in the challenge. Crossfire type stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make friends, but at least it's a possibility.
Now that we have Blood of the Dragon coming out, I mean, that's perfect.
Oh, yeah, I ran that. I flipped that at one point, and every person at the table just gave me a dirty look.
I think this is the thing you like about Melee, but it's the thing I dislike about any multiplayer format tacked on to a one-on-one card game is the diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like there's any room for it in a strategic card game. I feel like if the Melees I enjoy most, or a multiplayer game I enjoy most, if there is no room for collusion, you just say what you're doing on your turn, and your opponent goes and says, "No, none of this. Oh, if you don't attack me, then I won't attack you." It's just bullshit to me.
Okay, that's fair. And see, to me, that's one thing I actually really like about Melee. But with this in mind, I mean, do you guys think Melee is a viable competitive format, or is it something that should just stay as casual?
I like it casual.
Casual, Matt.
Yeah, that's kind of what I said at the beginning. Is I didn't particularly enjoy it as a competitive format, and Danny's reasoning is kind of half the reason why, especially when you get into tournaments where there are really bad players out there.
Yeah.
And it is very easy to manipulate
talk them into whatever
into them making a bad play that someone else might not notice as the game winning play.
It's also very easy for them to screw over people unintentionally by making bad plays.
Yeah. But I mean, you can't, I mean, that's just part of it, I guess. You can't really hold someone's inexperience with the game.
Yeah, you know. I also don't think the game is really designed for it. If I tap my guy to attack, and then first player attacks me, then the second player attacks me, then the third player attacks me. I'm I don't have enough guys to defend against three other people.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Well, I mean, it's up to six players now. That's the thing. So I mean, which we tried a six player game, and it was fun, but once you couldn't take the game seriously. Because a lot of it was who decides to attack who.
Yeah,
there's a
if you
luck
happen to have
to
like
players.
A flop and you have like no military icons, and then just three people do unopposed military claims against you. It's like, okay, I guess this was a fun game, guys. I'm totally wiped off the board now.
Yeah, yeah, okay, fair enough, fair enough. Well, yeah, I guess, I mean, that's pretty much it for Melee,
the
then.
I've played some multiplayer games that have deterrents, like you can only attack the person to your left or something like that. And I feel like that is much better most of the time, because it turns a single-player game, a multiplayer game, into several single-player games instead of... So I think the rules just mesh better.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That definitely
I like it as casual if people have built, like, theme decks and such things.
Yeah, because
like that always was my favorite way to play Melee.
It was just wacky
when Richard
decks.
Was still around, playing all those wacky decks that he played.
Yeah, we had a guy, Richard, in our old meta who just... He didn't play to win. He played to make everyone else angry with the wackiest themes that you could possibly have in Melee. And so he would just screw up everyone else's challenge math or screw up their challenges. And he never won a game of Melee, but they did make the Melee games very interesting. But sorry, I just wanted to give a little backstory on Richard. Richard,
yeah,
if you're listening.
He really liked his Nedley decks, Clansmen decks and such things that you're just like, why are you playing this? It's not even close to competitive. And he's like, well, I just like playing this deck.
Sure. Well, I think that's actually a great segue into the next thing that we were going to be talking about today. And that's deck archetypes, specifically house archetypes. It seems now that we're getting a bigger card pool. What's great about this is that you're not just building, you know, a Targ Burn deck with Dany and Drogo. You're not just building Baratheon. Well, I mean, yeah, you are still building Baratheon, Neil.
Yes, you are.
But I mean, you have more options with the houses now. Lanny is not just like core set Lanny anymore. They have more tricks, more things that they can do. You have everything from, like, jumping lions to, like, military Lanny to a heavy intrigue-focused Lanny. You know, you have toolbox Lannister. You have all
these... Lannister have lots of different decks at their disposal.
Yes, that is true. That is true. But, I mean, I think even Targ is starting to move towards having multiple decks to play with. You have your burn-focused deck with Dany in it. But on the other hand, with more Dothraki being released, now you're looking at, I think it's going to be viable soon to start doing Dothraki decks.
The two factions with the highest win rates in the tournament scene do have a lot of decks available to them, Mickey.
But yeah, I agree with that. Now, and that's both good, but it's also a problem. It gives variety to the meta, once again, as you said, to two of the top houses in the meta. But now, what are we looking at with the other houses? And that's the thing. Like, what is, now Greyjoy, it's not fully there yet. But, I mean, do you think Greyjoy has any other archetypes besides their straight military, unopposed, kill, claim power deck?
I mean, there's something. We've gotten small control elements, like Shipwright being able to bow locations, stealing locations, destroying attachments. Loot can take gold away from people in the middle of the damn challenge.
We're not even considering that a card.
But I disagree. I think that that card opens up a completely new archetype.
What's like that?
Choke?
Mill.
Oh, yeah.
That is not an archetype. That has never been an archetype.
I legitimately think that they are one card, once that gets printed, they are one card off of a mill deck being viable.
What card do you think? Mill an entire deck?
Yes. Not necessarily competitive, but viable.
Oh, okay.
Now, what do you think? What card are they missing then? Like, is it like an event that after you... There was one from 1.0, after you win a challenge, by how much you won the challenge by strength, you mill that that many cards off your opponent's deck?
I think it would have to be another stick. I don't think a one-time thing would be enough.
Sure.
Either a really big one-time thing, like a viable way to make, like, for instance, loot against Lannister could be, like, seven cards, right?
Yeah.
A more viable one off of that, or just like one more card to do like one or two cards a turn.
Okay.
But does that actually win games though? Just milling your opponent's deck, I mean, how long
viable,
do you think it
not
will take?
Competitive.
Yeah. I was going to mention that they have like the pillage. If they actually got some more stuff that keyed off of pillaging and looting, would
that's
be better.
That's the other thing. Like if they had like a mountain type character.
Yeah.
Well, they do. Urine.
Okay.
He just gets locations.
Or the mountains.
Yeah, but I mean, he's still... It's a mountain type thing, except, you know...
It is, but that's what we're saying. More stuff like that.
Sure,
like,
sure.
And it would make sense thematically for them as well.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Right now, it's mostly just attachment and location control, though.
Sure.
They have a little bit... Like, fishing net is awesome, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But it really... That feeds more into just their unopposed wreck-your-ass sort of theme.
So do you think they're moving more towards control now with the second like deck archetype?
I don't know if they're moving more towards control. The cards I see They've only got a couple of previews coming out that I know about, but there's the raiders that make weapons ambush, so I don't know how that's going to figure in. They have the iron mines to save. Is that iron mines?
Yep.
Something mines.
Iron mines.
Okay.
Should be iron mines.
Yeah.
And then that 7-cost captain that gets a location back after he wins.
Dagmer.
Yeah.
I love Dagmer.
So, I mean, it's still, like, again, it's just more like location cycling and controlling, though, so.
I would like to see them get a holy sub theme. Holy characters aren't around anymore.
Drowned God.
Actually do have a previewed card.
They have two cards.
Yeah, Priest of the Drowned God looks good to me.
And
but
they
I'd like to see him
one
expand
other guard,
on that.
They have one other card with the Drowned God keyword.
Wait, what's the other card?
Oh, well, the guy that gets stronger for with warships.
Yeah, well, Aaron Danbury.
That's right. Yeah, and giving.
So
Aaron,
it's a small theme, but I mean, it could be rolling. I don't know.
It,
they have
it
a lot of
sort of works in
1.0.
They sort of had a viable, not competitive holy build in 1.0. It's fun to play.
And I like the idea of recursion with the Drowned Gods too. You know, because that's their whole thing. What is
dead
man?
I think add more. The recursion I think is better than saving. I think saving is incredibly risky as it is.
It is, especially with Risen from the Sea being hands judgmented.
It's really tough. So, and that's why I like Iron Mines sort of. But then you just have to worry about treachery
But Iron Mines, like, you know, the cool thing about it is it saves any character. It's not just Greyjoy, right? Yeah, and I think that's, a huge change from 1.0, and, B, makes it viable to have Greyjoy bannering to other houses. I mean, I think Iron Mines alone makes it worthwhile now. And
you could play that in 1.0, any character.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, people would run out of house sometimes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, you know, moving more towards control. What about, here's something that I have an issue with. Danny, what do you think of Baratheon?
I don't know what to think of Baratheon. They're
Neil.
I was just looking at it, and I was going through the previews they've had so far, and obviously we got two cards coming out in the next chapter pack of the Alliance Tomorrow. Gendry, that's like double Dom, basically. Renowned Dom, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then the location that when you win Dom, you draw a card. So they have like a developing Dom theme, dominance theme, but I don't know where it's going because the only other two Baratheon cards that are previewed in the rest of the cycle are Motley and Drunk or
Stinking
Drunk, which are both attach on opponent cards. So I'm like, I don't know where this is going. No.
And that's the thing. I mean, like, you know, it's like they kind of did so much with Baratheon from core set on, because, you know, Neil was terrible for so long, and now they're just kind of not giving Baratheon anything. Like, yeah, sure, the dominance keying stuff, like Gendry, the new location for card draw, painted table, those are all great ways to put a timer on the thing, and dominance is, you know, a neat reaction. You have Feast for Crows that keys off that, too, in order to, you know, get your power and your card draw going. But, I mean, how is, to me, that's just not much of a mechanic. Okay, great. So as Baratheon, you want to win dominance. You know, a lot of the new cards that are coming out, you need to win dominance. That's great. You run 3 Iron Thrones.
Yep.
Awesome. You're winning dominance. Not a big deal at all. But it doesn't change, in my opinion, the archetypes of Baratheon, because then what are you doing in challenges? Stalling.
Yeah.
What does Baratheon do to
maybe
stall?
Maybe that's what they're going
Neil.
For.
Yeah.
It's just Baratheon wins in dominance. It's completely negative play experience. They kneel your guys or put a bunch of shitty attachments on your guys, and they don't even make challenges. They just sit there and do it round after round after round. And
I mean, and don't get me wrong, there is another Baratheon archetype, like the Baratheon Knights. You know, it's especially with Lady Sansa's Rose, Baratheon Tyrell. Yeah, and I mean, it's great to have a knight, Davos Seaworth, that has stealth. You want to win that challenge by yourself and have a lady character out in play. You have Shireen, you have Melisandre and things like that. And it almost runs Neil light, but once again, then it's Power Rush with Neil. And like that's all. It doesn't play any different than a normal Baratheon.
The problem
game.
I have with anything Baratheon Fealty right now is there is not 12 cards you can take out and still maintain the Baratheon theme.
Yeah, that is true.
Like if you were taking out 12 cards, they almost have to be stuff that helps you with the Neil. Like,
yep, exactly.
You're maybe not running 9 or 12 Rayleigh cords anymore. Maybe you're only running 8 to 6.
Sure.
So, I feel like any time with Neil as our only theme, the instant you try to Fealty into, or not banner into something else, you just destroy the theme of your in deck.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely agreed. And that's something I think is a problem. I think they need to expand Baratheon more, maybe adding more characters with intrigue icons. I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea. Because right now, which is really susceptible to intrigue.
Having said that, that's why I hate Renly so much. Because it's like a card that encourages bannering, and then I can't. Fuck you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about other people playing in your own respective metas, but I mean in ours, has anyone actually run Gendry yet? Like, successful?
I mean, it's not out yet.
Not Gendry, I meant Renly. Sorry.
Was anyone actually playing Baratheon?
No.
Yeah, we have about three Baratheon players, and I've got a Baratheon.
None of us play Renly.
Yeah, no one.
Usually, I've only seen one person play Renly, and it's not in a Baratheon banner deck. It's in a deck bannering with Baratheon.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. It was. I mean, is it a successful deck though? Like, did it work? Like that's the key. Like, he's what, six
not
cost?
Not really.
Tri-con?
I mean, Renly, like, five he's cost. Really cute, but in the end, you need to trigger his ability at least three times, I guess, mm-hmm. in order to make him.
Just sucks that it's the
normal.
First card. If it was every non-Baratheon
yeah,
card,
that
play.
Would be. Well, then at that point, I think he'd be an auto include.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be, and then it would give Baratheon something else. And then, I mean, you know, we've got the other houses like what's called Martell. So, Martell kind of confuses me. They've got so much icon stripping is coming out, and the lose to win,
yep, man.
That whole aspect. But I mean, and then when you banner the sun and stuff like that, you're pulling Nymeria, you're pulling other things along those lines. So what other thing can Martell do? Because this whole lose to win, yeah, it's great and everything, but it's still, in my opinion, now I don't know. If, I mean, I play a bit of Martell. It just doesn't seem like a tier one deck yet. Like a banner to Martell, there's plenty of tier one decks that are banner to Martell, but Martell by themselves. They haven't come together yet, and like even with their only thing that they can do, which is control and lose to win, like they just don't seem to succeed at it. Like, what do you guys think?
So they also have the like number of plot card related items.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be cool. It would just if there was a Martell plot. It was like a 0000, and it said when revealed, play another plot card. It'll be your plot card for this round.
Oh, they have to be careful with that. Plot cycling got kind of out of control in 1.0.
Yeah, but this is a 0000 that just lets
it
you...
It doesn't matter. Plot cycling got out of control.
You treat the second plot you play like it's your actual
plot.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, so basically it lowers the number of effective plots you have by one, which means you get to cycle one turn sooner.
So maybe
I actually have a reverse idea of that. Give them a plot that is allowed to be played as their eighth plot.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, it'd have to be like... an agenda or something.
Sure. One thing I like actually about your idea, Danny, is maybe to to kind of keep people from abusing that power. It's a 0000 plot. When you play it, reveal another plot. Do not trigger its when revealed action.
Okay. That'd be more what I was thinking probably.
Yeah. I mean, because then in that case, all you're getting is gold, initiative, and claim. And then persistent.
Well, the deck. That way, you can really abuse like. I'll play my 0000 into trading with Pentos.
Oh yeah,
you can also do that with.
Oh, that's true.
Like, there's some other ones that have like decent values with like sure. negative effects
what
instead.
What is it? Recruitment. Recruitment March or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, 931. I think.
I'm still wary.
Actually,
of
I
this.
Don't think that one's a reveal. I think that one's like sneak attacks. It's just a passive effect.
So how about it blanks the text box of the next plot you play?
I would love
problem.
To see that. I miss Forgotten Plans. It was a 1.0 plot, and it said treat every other plot as if its text box was blank.
Unless it's Forgotten Plans.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you
could trigger when revealed, but everything else, as soon as you move past the plot phase, everyone...
And it had decent stats, too. It was like, what, a 4-4-1?
4-3-1, I think.
Yeah, something like that. So, I mean, that wasn't too bad. So you think more ways to get... Well...
It was just a suggestion. I don't even know if it would make the deck better.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, I mean, yeah, I think it would because, more strength with Dawn. There's Doran's game, more power with Doran's game. And, like, there's other ways for it to happen. Doran himself gives mm-hmm. more strength.
I was happy to see the Quentin preview. But more lords and ladies for him to pump is good.
And then also I like his, when he leaves play effect.
Just having another Lord or Lady for Martell was good enough.
But and then yes, go second plus one strength and nice. Stealth. Like, that's great. And I thought he was great. Well, I guess let's move. Now, since Joe isn't here, I guess we'll all answer for Joe on this one. What is Night's Watch? The most successful Night's Watch decks don't even run the wall at this point.
I mean, they're just defensive decks.
Yeah.
They're defensive weenies. Like, that's all they really do. Like, they go second. They try to win challenges that they can win if they can. They just defend your challenges and gain power. Like, that's all they do.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got this, like, Ranger subtype, but that still plays into just being a defensive deck.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I think there is some room for, like, a more aggressive Night Watch deck. They have, like, I don't even know if you would call it a sub-theme, but where they kind of band together to get better.
Okay.
Like, the Meister can save any other Night Watch.
Amen.
Benjin makes any other Ranger not be able to stealth. Jon Snow... goes along with any other challenge
with any Night's Watch character. Yeah, so it's kind of like Super Friends.
Yeah,
like, let's all just get together and work together.
Like
and
slivers and magic.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. I actually like that a lot. I think they could do a lot more with that as well.
I think I'm probably forgetting some cards.
Well, it's still also defensive though. I mean, Benjin prevents stealth on people, but that's a defense strategy.
Jon Snow is about as offensive as
Jon
you can
Snow
get.
Is purely offensive. Yeah. Like, there is no defense in his card at all.
Which is why I think a lot of the more successful Night's Watch decks don't run the wall, because, I mean, who cares? You know, like, honestly, yeah, it's two more power.
I run them both.
You run them both?
Yes. I actually think it's effective. I actually disagree with the way some people play Night's Watch, personally, but...
Do you disagree with the way Joe plays Night's Watch?
Kinda.
Oh, let's start this now. All right, Matt. Now, how do you play Night's Watch? That is
something that I do. Like, I don't know. I don't know about Joe's recent decks, but there are two cards that I have in my Night's Watch that I don't see very often, and they are Will and the Old Range Hunter.
Okay.
The 2-cost, 1-strength guy where you discard cards to gain a gold.
Yeah.
I think people way underestimate how good he is.
I think people with the new event coming out that, you know, makes you kneel 2 Rangers. I don't think he's underestimated anymore.
Oh, no. I think people will start running him, and then they'll realize that he's actually a decent card. Mm-hmm. Like, similar to, like, Netrunner, I do not find card advantage in Game of Thrones to be terribly relevant as it is in other games.
Really?
What?
I don't know if I agree with that.
It's important. Don't get me wrong. It's important. But the number of events that actually affect the outcome of things in a challenge is very, very low. So actually having cards in your hand doesn't really do a terrible amount. Like, it literally just gives you cards to target. Like, you need cards to play on your turn, but you don't necessarily need cards during your turn very often.
Oh, it depends. I mean, I guess it depends on the house that you're playing.
Yeah, that is true.
It depends on your build.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, Targ, Lanny.
Yeah, Targ
Martell.
With all the kill that they've got.
Yeah, I mean, those. And so, but I think, like, you know, Stark even. You know, things that determine, I mean, they don't necessarily determine the challenge, but For the North determines challenge. That's more challenge math.
I haven't run For the North since the second pack came out.
I understand. But I mean, you know, it's basically, you know, it replaces itself, essentially, for +2 strength, which isn't too terribly bad.
You know, I'm not saying card advantage is irrelevant.
Sure.
But it's, so the gold for one card sometimes is totally worth it, especially when, like,
I see your point.
Yeah, I get where Matt's coming from. I kind of feel the same way. It's good to have some card draw, but this isn't the type of game where it's, like, the more card draw you have, the better.
Well, yeah, because the problem is the reserve value. You can't have too much card draw. Yeah,
there's reserve, and then there's also just intrigue. Intrigue is such a powerful challenge to make. Like, the more attached you are to the cards in your hand, the worse the intrigue challenge is going to hurt you. So, like, plus you're also drawing, like, 2 cards.
It also pads your hand with intrigue challenges.
No, it definitely does.
I think it goes both ways. Yeah. I see your point.
I completely disagree with you guys. Card advantage is about getting the cards you need to win the game faster.
Yeah.
You need to draw into the pieces of your deck that combo with whatever other pieces you have in play that will win the game in round 4 instead of in round 6.
Sure, sure. And you have to have, you know, board presence. You have to maintain board presence, like, past turn 3. Otherwise, game's kind of pretty much up in the air. Having those tools in order to do that is pretty important.
Yeah, no, like I said, card draw... So this is the main distinction that you're making that I didn't make in my statement.
Okay.
Card advantage is unimportant. That, I think, is not a hard fact to argue. Card draw is important.
They're two totally different things.
I see. Okay. I didn't make that distinction. I see what you're saying. Okay, that makes perfect sense, actually. Yeah, especially for Night's Watch. I mean, being able to get rid of cards. So the card draw is important to have them in your hand, but then having the ranger out there, you know, the old, what are they called?
The old forest ranger, or hunters, yes. I think.
Yeah,
like
old
that.
Forest hunter. But having that extra gold, especially since Night's Watch doesn't have a reducing location, I think is really important.
Yeah.
And like I said, okay, I see your point with that. Well, I hope, Joe, we did, well, I guess, I don't know.
I don't know. Think
he's going to be mad?
I don't think so. Joe's a pretty understanding guy. Yeah. He'll either disagree with me or he'll think about it.
Yep.
Either way, I don't think he'll be terribly upset.
That's fair. Words.
He'll have
obligatory
words.
Something, 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 Night's Watch sucks statement.
Well,
let's move on.
Let's go to our resident Targ player, Mike. I mean, the two major archetypes with Targ are pretty apparent right now. Like, what do you think about them? Do you think Dothraki is going to be a relevant theme to a Targ deck?
I think they need another cheap Dothraki character.
Okay, you don't think six is enough right now?
I don't like Rekaro because he doesn't do much of anything.
You got the Crones, you've got the Braided Warriors, Screamers, Warriors.
I can't remember.
And then you've got Rekaro, you've got
Drogo.
I mean, that's a lot of Dothraki right there.
It is, but they don't have anything tying it all together.
Oh,
that new army's coming out that, you know, you can reduce the cost for Dothraki, but there's no, like, you know, trigger this effect if you have Dothraki characters in play.
That's true.
Crone.
Yeah, except for Crone right now.
But
the Crone also requires at least Intrigue or Pillage, which currently there's only one Dothraki character with Intrigue on it.
Yeah. That's what Little Birds are for. They don't have no attachment except Weapon, do they?
It's an extension. Dothraki is an extension of what Targ already does, which is just kill stuff.
Yeah, okay. So you don't think it's a separate theme yet? It's pretty much just...
Not quite fleshed out. They're working on it.
So it's...
We did see Jogo or somebody coming. It's a preview. Was it Jogo?
I think so. I don't know, but go ahead.
It was another Blood Rider who...
Yeah, it was
looks,
Jogo. Yep.
He's or much no, like Rekaro. Like,
Ago?
Yeah, I think it was Ago.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
He works with other Dothraki. He's not that great by himself.
Sure, sure. So we're pretty much sticking with military challenges and burn at this point.
Yeah, kill events.
Yeah.
Burn is still king of Targ.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to switch out the dragons and Drac to try and make a solid Dothraki deck for the time being.
Yeah, for right now at least.
They are working on it, like I said. It's just... Drac is too good to not include.
Sure. Now, what about decks that are like pretty toolboxy in nature? Let's take Tyrell for example. Now, Tyrell has, you know, some archetypes. They've got their Power Rush more so than anything else at this point, but they have a lot of utility cards in them as well that let them basically deal with a varied amount of situations, and especially with the Arbor coming out, which I think is an amazing card. And I know some of you will disagree with this, but it also allows them not only to have early game gold, sure, at a cost of 4 gold, but for late game, or mid game and late game, it also mitigates the pleasure barge playing, which can be really hurtful. Playing a pleasure barge by itself, that -1 gold can actually really hurt your curve. But at the same time, now you mitigate it, and you get a burst draw of 3, essentially. And so with Tyrell, what else do you guys think that they can do with Tyrell besides... just throwing a bunch of random crap into their card pool?
Tyrell's like another one where they've got a lot of like Night's Watch. They kind of have like synergy with each other. Mm-hmm. Like they like being
challenge
with Tyrell
yeah.
people. Like they've got Left and Right. They've got Growing Strong. So I think more of like a cohesive like Tyrell help each other deck, mostly because Tyrell right now feels like it's stronger if you just like banner it into somewhere else and put Knight of Flowers and Rose and
yeah.
make a Knight's deck out of not Tyrell.
Sure.
So.
And then, I mean, especially with like Arbor coming out now, Tyrell Lords of the Crossing is going to be pretty viable as well.
Well, we talked about if Tyrell had more ladies themselves,
yeah.
then they'd be more playable.
I agree.
Without a banner. You're like, I mean, you're usually bannering into Tyrell with a faction that has lots of ladies.
But, I mean, at this point, like, you know, when coming up next week, I'm actually just not even going to play Lady Sansa's Rose out of Tyrell anymore. Like, Tyrell, Lords of the Crossing, just big military challenges put to the sword, you know, and, like, high gold, high burst draw. You know, like we were saying before, it's not about card advantage, but I will have Mander and Pleasure Barge there to get through my cards as quickly as possible. Because one of the biggest problems with Tyrell is you blow through your hand super quick.
That's always the problem I've had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I either win games super quick or I all of a sudden have no hand. And
yeah. So, I mean, mid-game burst draw is really important. I think Lord of the Crossing helps Support of the People go off, helps the Mander go off, helps Put to the Sword go off. I might not even run Put to the Sword, you know, at that point. Who cares? It's the extra power challenge. But, I mean, other than that, it's I don't know if Lady Sansa's Rose is really necessary for Tyrell to do well at this point. It's just one, it's one part of it. Sure, and in a Tyrell Knight's deck, of course it's going to work. But Tyrell as a house themselves, I don't think they need it.
I don't know that they need it, but, I mean, even one gold for one power is a pretty acceptable exchange if
Agreed.
You have the extra gold.
Yeah.
So, like, if you've got the extra space, you could probably play it. But I agree that it's probably on, like, the short list of cuts.
Sure, sure. And then I guess let's, I mean, I don't know what, you know, in terms of, we don't really need to talk about Lanny. Like, they've got Lanny Military, Lanny Events, Lanny Intrigue, mm-hmm. Lanny, I mean, I don't get it. I don't see why. I mean, Lannister is just so strong right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, like, that's one of my biggest problems with the game as a whole. Not like I think the game is amazing. It's super fun, but like Lannister is strong, and it is multiple strong decks.
Yeah,
and I think that is kind of a problem.
I think after this cycle, maybe they'll put the Baratheon squeeze on Lannister.
Well, I mean after the Stark box comes out, I mean this is all gonna
oh yeah no
it's all gonna be completely
I'm
irrelevant.
So excited about the Stark box.
April 7th, can't like, wait. And we've got something interesting coming up. I mean, this what is it, next weekend, April 2nd is the regional in Indianapolis, and this is the Stark box isn't going to be out, so all we're going to have is the current meta without the Stark box at a regional, which to me is very, very strange. I think this is going to be one of the, because every other regional is in May, June, July, things along those lines.
Yeah.
So I think what's going to be, we're sitting in a stagnant meta right now. The top houses have been the top houses for the past two kits, essentially. But, you know, and then now that this chapter pack is out, what houses do you, I mean, obviously we've got Lannister and Targ still being two of the top houses. Do you guys see any other houses being the like another tier one house after this chapter pack?
I still like Stark a lot, obviously. I actually think one of Stark's best matchups currently is Targ. So I think that the fact that a lot of Targ players are out there really helps it out. Obviously, when the big box comes out, I think it'll be more apparent to more people that yeah. Stark is really good. It will also actually just be really good.
Because it's going to have the largest card pool out of any of the
Yeah, I mean,
houses.
It's got the largest card pool. It will have the most themes, so
sure.
You'll see less of it coming until like more and more cards are played out of the deck. I also just think that the themes that they're introducing for Stark are just extremely powerful as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Go ahead.
I still think we shouldn't discount Greyjoy. I
okay.
think they've got a C-Zone chair and setup wins games for Greyjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah,
a nice five-card flop with a C-Zone chair and the ability to just pick
it's so
off
much, it's
characters.
So much threat at that point, you know, because then you're playing around C-Zone chair the entirety of the game.
Yeah, and they've got all those things to, you know, make challenges on opposed. You know, you're sitting across from an opponent, a Greyjoy opponent running C-Stone chair, and you know there's four or five ways for things to be on opposed, whether
sure.
it be intimidate or an event or a location. You're like, well, do I play? I want to play Tywin right now, but I can't defend with him. He won't count his strength, and then he'll get C-Stone chaired.
I have to say though, one of my favorite things that happened last week was I was playing Lannister Lord of the Crossing, what some would call a jumping lions deck against Greyjoy. And they initiated a Balin challenge against me. And so I paid one gold for Hear Me Roar, brought in the mountain to defend against it, and won the challenge, and then through the mountain's pillage was able to kill Balin. And I thought that was just one of the greatest things that ever happened. I don't know how often that's ever going to happen again.
Probably
but,
never.
Yeah, but it was definitely a lot of fun. Like I enjoyed it. I mean, and yeah, I agree. I don't think we should discount Greyjoy as much. I think they're definitely a threat in the meta right now. I think the thing about it is, though, is just that they're too paper tigery to me. And
yeah.
that's the problem, with, in my opinion, with Greyjoy. It's like it takes a lot to make. It takes almost a perfect set up to make Greyjoy worthwhile.
Yeah, Greyjoy suffers a lot from needing like a few really good characters to hit the table to do well.
Balin.
And one of the biggest problems with that specifically is Targaryen, which is really popular and very strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like Crown of Gold, Drak can take care of most Greyjoy characters with a Dany standing. And then intrigue on top of that. Greyjoy is really susceptible to intrigue.
Crown of Gold, Balin.
Or Asha, and just get her out of the way. You know,
I mean, like a Crown of Gold to Balin does actual nothing.
Yeah, but,
I mean, he's just a one. Like his whole thing is gone.
Yeah, exactly.
That. He's not dead, but he's not doing.
He's just kind of worthless. But I mean, you know, then it's a condition attachment, so they just remove it at some point, or you know, like try and get an unopposed through, and we do not sew it off of him. Something.
Yeah, I mean, I won't disagree that they're a glass cannon, but they seem to be,
Oh, yeah, they're very effective glass cannons.
Yes, they are.
That's the problem I've always had with them. High risk, high reward. Yeah. Very.
And I think, and the thing about it is, with Seastone Chair, if you're not playing a deck that's running a good amount of attachments and you're really susceptible to Seastone Chair, I mean, you're in a bad place. And
it's one of my favorite parts about my Stark deck.
You have a lot of attachments. Oh, yeah, Lady.
I've got Lady and I've got Ice.
Oh, yeah.
And then just the fact that, like, you're never getting an unopposed military challenge against me, ever. Like, it's just, like, I run 33 characters, 34 or 5 maybe, and more than half of them have military icons.
But what about, like, a pumped-up Balin? I mean, he gets right through.
Okay.
What about ships that they just kneel them and you guys don't count your strength?
Do you have 5 ships?
No, but, you know, they
have got 3 dogs might, and a Tumblestone Knight and 2 big dudes with military icons, too.
That's true. That is true. Yeah, it is going to be really hard to get military and power off against a good Stark player. And so I think that's going to... So, once again, you know, I think Greyjoy is going to be not necessarily a bad... I don't think they're ever going to be a bad house, but they're not going to be the top house for a while.
They're tier 1.5.
Yeah, because right I mean... And then, I mean, I think Tyrell is going to be up there. I mean, that's my prediction for... Until the big box comes out. I mean,
they already are. They're like third, aren't they? Or second, fourth? They're like third or fourth already, aren't they?
Third or fourth? Yeah, in the rankings.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely up there. I think they're just going to get better when we have more builds that we can do with them. So I think that's something that's going to be very interesting. I don't see Martell being relevant just yet. I think as a banner, I think they're very relevant. But as a main house, you know, they've got tricks.
Yeah, they're definitely one of the most annoying decks,
yes,
to say the least.
Yeah. Typical Martell.
And you have to pay attention when you play against a Martell player, much like playing against a Targ player. If you're not paying attention, you're going to lose. You know, that's really what it boils down to. Oh, anything else to add on this? I think we're out of time for today. Matt, I'd really like to thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely, no problem.
Yeah. Thank you for filling in for Joe.
Yeah, Joe, we miss you. Joe will be back next week, so don't worry. He's not gone forever. I'd like to thank Arkham House Games once again for letting us do our podcast here. I'd like to thank Steven at inexistence.org for pretty much hosting all of our website stuff, all of our podcast stuff, and taking care of pretty much anything tech-related for us. You should check them out at inexistence.org. Thank you, guys. Once again, feel free to leave any comments. If you have any questions, anything you want us to talk about, feel free to leave it in the comments section, and we'll catch you next week.